This is SMDC.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 21 of The High Ground, U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command's official podcast. I'm Ronald Bailey, a.k.a. Beetle. It's December 2024 at the time of this recording, and we're pleased to bring you two special guests to discuss a topic that I originally thought would turn into a short audio news story or mini podcast, perhaps. Well, that didn't happen on account of the fulfilling discussion I had with these two gentlemen on a topic that's applicable to a much broader swath of the Army than I originally thought. When most people think about those involved with Army space capabilities, they probably associate that with functional Area 40 space operations officers, or officers and NCOs with a base enabler additional skill identifier, or quite simply those assigned to the 1st Space Brigade or Army Space Missile Defense Command. Well, buckle up, because the Army's new space training strategy clearly shows how the future Army plans to instill the knowledge of the battlefield use of friendly and adversary space capabilities that will touch all soldiers and leaders across the Army. For this seemingly niche, but in truth highly significant topic, we're pleased we could speak to perhaps the two most knowledgeable people in the Army about Army space training and the new 2024 Army space training strategy. They are promotable Colonel Donald Brooks, Commandant of the Army Space and Missile Defense School, and Rob Marquez, Director of the school's Space Training Division, as well as the Space Training Strategy's leading author. Hopefully through this episode, we can learn from Brooks and Marquez how space isn't just an enabling nice to have or an inconvenience if the adversary is able to use it against us, but how space enables the more lethal use of our and our adversary's battlefield systems, something the Army must train and be prepared for. I asked Brooks and Marquez to help us understand the Army space training strategy by laying out exactly what it is, how a strategy is different but often supporting to policy or doctrine, as they're often conflated with each other, but they're not the same, and where the need for the Army space training strategy originated, this not actually being the first iteration of the ASTS. We begin with Brooks' response.
Beetle, definitely a great question. I would say our strategy, you know, by definition, a strategy is a plan of action to achieve goals or end states. It's really almost kind of our vision. It's an aspirational document where policy is that set of rules that guide decision making, and doctrine is really those based on best practices and principles that help guide operational and tactical activities. I often say that doctrine is the foundation upon which we build successful operational buildings on top of. And so for us, if you take those definitions and you synthesize the interrelationship, that Army space training strategy should inform policy and doctrine. The crux of the ASTS is to, you know, really drive how we integrate and train our friendly space capabilities and how we integrate those at the depth and breadth required at echelon across the entire Army. And then how we start to move forward with interdicting our adversary capabilities, because our adversaries will use space as well. And so there are things that we can do to interdict their use of space, and then providing relevant effects at the timing, tempo, and pace that maneuver commanders require to be successful in the near fight in large-scale combat operations. And so this strategy really drives us to that point. It's a comprehensive approach on how we will build a more lethal force to deter and defeat, if necessary, all of those adversaries in a denied, degraded, disrupted space operating environment.
Marquez added to that by highlighting the Army Space Training Strategy origins and how and why that original document was updated for the battlefield realities of 2024.
The original started in 2013. When you started looking back then at the Russia-Ukraine conflict that started back then, where the annexation of Crimea and those follow-on operations, Russia had a lot of success with electronic warfare against Ukraine, specifically a lot of GPS and SATCOM interference. That gave us our initial framework to build that original document that was signed at the time by Lieutenant General Dickinson, the DAG-357, and also the TRADOC DCG at the time. It focused initially on training brigades and below on what the Ukrainians were seeing in theater during that conflict. So we've a lot of GPS interference and how to mitigate it, and same with SATCOM interference. And it really started building the Army's network of trained and educated three Yankee space enablers. The 2024, so fast forward 11 years later, the 2024, we're still talking about a D3 SOE and how important it still is at that tactical level, especially at the brigade and below. But this version is it more succinctly and accurately lays out the framework to truly leverage space to enable and enhance our land component operations. From the lowest echelon all the way up to core, it's been stated that core is very flexible because they can be tactical and operational as the order's given. But it's going to focus on more capabilities and integrations of the new emerging formations and concepts like the multi-domain task force, the soft cyberspace triad, and the TSEGs, the theater strike effects groups that are in the latest ARSTRUCK.
Brooks rounded that out by providing additional perspective on why space education and training across the entire force is important to the Army, regardless of domain on the modern battlefield.
In 2013 to 2014, that crisis between Ukraine and Russia really showed the world, especially the military, multi-domain operations. And then you fast forward to the current crisis, it's really highlighting multi-domain environment inside of large-scale combat operations. And for us, that multi-domain environment within large-scale combat operations is the new norm. And we can no longer assume we have that superiority across all those domains and that uncontested access to the capabilities the space domain provides. And our ability to shoot, move, communicate, you know, effectively and efficiently is directly tied to our use of and reliance on space-enabled equipment. And as one of the largest users, if really the largest user of space, we have over 5,200 pieces of space-enabled equipment in a single PCT. The Army must adapt our training.
As with many topics here on the podcast, I like to ask our guests to help clear up any real or potential misconceptions. For the Army Space Training Strategy, I asked Marquez, then Brooks, to clarify not what the space training strategy is, as they'd already done that, but what it is not.
Yeah, I would say very plainly up front, it's not policy or doctrine. It's a plan to train and educate every soldier on the importance of space and the conditions of space, or lack thereof, that can be created on the battlefield. It is not a list of courses or classes. It's not additional tasks for the unit to accomplish. We get a lot of that when we go out to our home station training events. We're not trying to pile on more tasks for them to do. We're trying to create the environment for them to conduct their tasks in. So conducting a metal task in a denied, degraded, disrupted space operating environment brings a little complexity to the environment for them to complete their tasks in. It is not graduate level academics by any means. And it's not intended for those that are already trained in space professionally, not our FA-40s, really the three Yankees are space enablers. We could kind of consider those space professionals. They're more space enablers. They've had that once over the world, but really we're not there to train the space professionals. But again, going back, it is not policy or doctrine. We're hoping that this strategy, this plan feeds that policy, feeds that doctrine.
I think Marquez hit on a key point there that helped me at least understand that this isn't really additional training or task, but the overlay of a condition or environment to existing training. In my infantry and air defender brain, I immediately liken that to NBC training during gunnery or sticks lane training. Colonel Brooks added this for clarification.
Yeah, Beetle, just a couple weeks ago when General Ganey and I briefed the Forcecom Commander General Pappas, we made it analogous to weapons qualification and the conditions that you must qualify with your weapon. And so you qualify with your weapon not just during a day shoot, you also qualify your weapon at night during a nighttime shoot. You qualify with your MOP gear on, with your MOP gear off. And so it's the conditions, it's the environment to which we are expecting people to train, certify, and qualify within is really the what we're getting at in the crux of this space training strategy.
I then ask Brooks to discuss the significance of the 2024 Army Space Training Strategy being signed not only by the Army Space and Missile Defense Command Commanding General, but also Army Forces Command and Training and Doctrine Command Commanding Generals. Will approvals at this level help push this further across the Army now that the strategy includes almost literally everyone in the Army? I was expecting a relatively succinct answer, but his response let me know that this seemingly innocuous aspect of the strategy was much more significant than I had expected it to be.
It is between force comm and TRADOC. That is the institutional Army and the operational Army. And we haven't had the buy-in at this level in the previous documents. And I think that's where we lost some, call it WASTA, to go into home station training or combat training centers, or go into the various centers of excellence within their professional military education pipelines and programs, and to say, this is why you need to integrate, or we need to integrate space into these various venues. And we weren't getting a lot of, I would say, acceptance for that to happen. There are, I would say, pockets of excellence where certain centers of excellence saw that. For example, the Maneuver Center of Excellence, they understood how GPS jamming was affecting infantrymen's ability to navigate. If you go to the Fire Center of Excellence, they saw how GPS jamming was affecting precision guided munition delivery, the effectiveness of that or the accuracy of that delivery. And they were, I would say, are some of our biggest advocates before we had this level of buy-in and approval and acceptance at the TRADOC and the ForceCom CG levels. And so for us, with now having this, I think this approval at this at these levels, it now gives us a lot more, I think, backing as we go into the various home station training events that lead to CTC rotations and at the combat training centers, and then getting into the combat training centers and working with, you know, the ops group or the op four and integrating these capabilities into their scheme of movement, maneuver, and fires as a blue or a red force. And then on the flip side, going into the institution, and once again, as I mentioned in one of my previous classes, that as I instruct or as I'm a senior mentor, what we do is we build our successful operations upon the institutional foundation, and no longer really having these as electives in the various programs of instruction at the various centers of excellence and the schoolhouses, but actually making it part of the core curriculum, where they're going in and we're teaching space and we're educating and we're building it from the ground up, and not sprinkling it at the leader level. Now we're bringing young soldiers into this knowledge and experience from the very early age. And so as they continue to grow through their pipeline and through their professional career, they are now more knowledgeable and more cognizant of that denied, degraded, disrupted space operating environment that we know we're going to face in the future fight. We're facing it in today's fight, and we're definitely going to face it in the future fight as well.
Early in our discussion, Marquez highlighted that the new Army Space Training Strategy applies very broadly across every echelon. I followed that by asking a rather blunt question as to who should be familiar not just with space education and training institution and those opportunities, but who should care that the strategy itself is now out on the street. I mean, if I'm a field artillery battery commander in Germany or a civil engineer battalion sergeant major in Japan, do I need to crack that book open, so to speak? Isn't everything I need to know about the strategy going to come from my G3 ops or training folks? Marquez and later Brooks came back with very solid responses to that.
Well, Beetle, the right answer there is anybody in a leadership position should care about this. And if they care about it, then the soldiers below them or that they're leading are going to care about it. We used to say, and I hear it still often, is every soldier is a sensor. Well, we need to take that and apply that to this particular document and this type of training, because it may not be that company commander that is the lead element doing a recon. It may be, you know, an E3, E4 that fills that environment before anybody else touches it, and that soldier needs to understand it. But they're only going to get the training that is required based on their MOS or that their company commander and above feels they should. So really, again, goes back to any leader that is leading troops anywhere should care about this at all echelons, regardless of MOS and regardless of rank.
And Beto, when we briefed General Pappas, that was one of his concerns as well, is how do we do this? Because we we have space support elements in every division and corps. We also have them in within every special forces group. And what is the expectation? Do they train in this on a daily basis, or do they see this on a monthly or a quarterly basis? And we're currently working that with ForceCom and TRADOC, but in particular, the director of training at ForceCom, to really hash out what is the best reoccurrence for maintaining proficiency as they work through the various levels of training evaluation or training metrics, if they're untrained, practiced, or trained. And so that's something we're currently working. It's nothing that was directed within the strategy itself, but it was a great question from General Pappas and his staff on how we can implement this with a very small population of space operations officers and soon-to-be non-commissioned officers spread throughout the divisions and the corps and special forces groups and other Army and joint echelons as well.
I follow that by asking our guests what legs the Army space training strategy stands on. Was this something literally created in a vacuum due to operational and institutional need, or does it thread through and nest with other Army DoD foundational documents such as AR-900-1, Army Space Policy, AR-350-50, Mission Command, or even the venerable FM-3-0 Operations?
I would tell you that the connective tissue with this document to those various field manuals, ATPs, ADPs, you mentioned various Army regulations. Even when we briefed General Pappas, we were talking how this will get integrated into the ForceCom regulations and the ForceCom policies that will then drive how home station training and the combat training centers will execute or bring this into their the execution of various operations and environments to which our folks will train, certify, and qualify in. We see this document being influenced by those other documents. And on the reverse side, this document, our Army Space Training Strategy, will help influence those documents as well. And ultimately, this was really influenced by the Army Space Vision Supporting Multi-Domain Operations that was published. It was signed back in December and published in January by the Secretary of the Army, Chief of Staff of the Army, and the Sergeant Major of the Army.
I think some across the Army are going to be hesitant when they learn about the Army Space Training Strategy, and rightfully so, ask what the impact on resources is going to be for their organizations in terms of manpower and cost. Who's going to pay for all this? How many slots is this going to eat up on my MTO or TDA? Do I have to start finding and planning transportation of my unit and equipment to specific rangers that offer D3 SOE to conduct my unit training? At home station, who's my op for? All legitimate questions, but ones I specifically asked our guests to address.
This strategy is executed across three lines of effort at multiple venues, and it's currently funded through various lines of money. From Space and Missile Defense, the CTC, and DAMO-TR to help us execute this. And utilizing the Space and Missile Defense Schoolhouse, and within our schoolhouse, the directorate that Rob oversees is the Army Space Training Division. And that division goes, and it's the forward-facing element that goes to integrate with all of the space support elements at those various corps, divisions, and brigades, once again, that we are there as a part of their team. And so ultimately, as we ramp up the requirements, it will drive additional resources for the Army, but it doesn't take resources away from those units. We're actually bringing in and complementing those space support elements with our own Army Space Training Division to implement this strategy and move it forward. Because that's the one thing we were cognizant of. It's a no growth. It is a low-cost solution for the Army to bring this forward. And the way we even, to drive down the cost even more, is to employ our own Space Training Division in this particular strategy to help integrate not only the home station training and the CTCs like we continually do all the time, but also working this into the various courses of instruction or programs of instruction at the Centers of Excellence.
To hit on a couple other pieces, you talked about D3 SOE capable ranges. It's a non-issue for us. And that's one thing we've been hitting hard at all these other MDO range type meetings is, for us, we've been doing this with live jamming at different locations across CONUS and OCONUS with no problems. I mean, yes, there are some policy restrictions, that are out there at the higher levels of the government. However, what we are approved to do, we do, and we use the time allotted. So we can do it anywhere. We don't have to have a specific range to do this on. We've demonstrated this since 2015. You also hit on the OP4 capability to replicate it and using the training devices and the simulations and simulators. So OP4 capability, as we all know, because we put a lot of time and effort into it on a lot of the working groups and the GOSCs that we see and are a part of, but their OP4 capability is critical to this strategy. And it's outlined throughout. If you look throughout the strategy, you'll see the need to basically replicate this environment at the various training areas, wherever that's at, whether it's at a CTC or at home station. You know, live jammers at home station and CTCs, that's really, as we've progressed through this over the last 10 years or so, we've found that there's no real good way to replicate it in a CTC or at a home station training event for those maneuver forces. It's got to be live. So having those live training aids and devices is critical. On the flip side of that, when you talk about warfighters and you talk about the Mission Command Training Program hosted warfighter exercises, the critical piece to that in the OP4 is providing that constructive capability inside of the war sim, or if it's next gen constructive, which is on its way now. Those two areas, if you look at constructive as a whole, being able to provide it in a simulated environment and a live environment.
Closing out, I ask each of our guests to talk about the need for and potential impacts of the new Army Space Training Strategy. Colonel Brooks offered the following.
I would say leaders today, more so than ever, truly understand the importance of space, and they recognize space as a warfighting domain, as it truly is the connective tissue of our warfighting functions that really builds our definitive combat power. And like I mentioned, it is vastly different than it was just a few years ago. Our adversaries have brigade-sized formations with the intent and capability to deny, degrade, disrupt, and destroy our ability to leverage space-based capabilities. They conduct live and integrated training at home station. Currently, they do it to hone their skill sets and dial in their various TTPs to make sure they are prepared to take this away from us in the future fight. And so gone are the days of setting that theater with air power and air defense artillery alone to gain air superiority that then would facilitate land and maritime superiority. I would say today and in the future, far left of launch, we must shape that multi-domain environment with effects layered at scale, range, and echelon with space to set that theater to facilitate de-escalation off-ramps along that path to crisis as we have that position of advantage on the ultimate high ground. And if asked to dominate, we can do so from those positions of advantage.
And finally, I ask Marquez a question I often do with other guests on various topics. This episode being about a training strategy, I wasn't quite sure how he could qualify such a difficult question. But I ask, does Army Space Training Strategy save, or at least have the potential to save our soldiers' lives?
These soldiers are going to be better prepared to operate in this environment more effectively and more efficiently. They're going to be able to prepare for it, recognize when this environment exists, react to it, mitigate it, and report it. And in the end, allowing these commanders to have that space to make those decisions that are very risk-informed and critical to saving these soldiers' lives.
On behalf of the High Ground podcast team here at SMDC Public Affairs Redstone Arsenal, I want to thank Colonel Promotable Donald Brooks and Rob Marquez from the Army Space and Missile Defense School for sitting down with us to accomplish this episode, and especially to Rob for all the background discussions weeks in advance to help educate me on the Army Space Training Strategy, allowing me to ask them more informed questions from here in the studio. To learn more about SMDC's exciting people, missions, and locations around the world, check out our social media or follow us on the web at www.smdc.army.mil. From the High Ground Studio at Redstone Arsenal, I'm Ronald Bailey.